The phrase from text 29, Daiva Guptam, protected by the personality of Godhead. We discussed that, yes? Yes? Yes. Once one surrenders unto the service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord takes charge of the maintenance of the devotee's body, and there's no need for anxiety for protection. Confirmed in 2nd Canto, Chapter 2. No anxiety about the maintenance of his body. Again, the Supreme Lord takes care of the maintenance of the innumerable species of bodies. Therefore, one who fully engages in his service will not go unprotected by the Supreme Lord. Devahuti was naturally unmindful of the protection of her body, which was being taken care of by the Supreme Person. I'd like to discuss that a little bit more. I recall we touched on these two items, protection and maintenance. There are two limbs of, or angas of surrender, Padma Purana description. I mentioned also yesterday, Jiva Goswami says of the six, one is the angi and the others are the angas of that angi. So this, the principle of maintenance and the principle of protection, they're so close. Of the animal propensities, defending, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, or fearing. So the preservation of the body, or preservation of your, I don't know, your mental space, your sense of how you're perceived by others, or, you know, that mental space, how you think of yourself and how others think of you. That's certainly, more of a human trait, but animals, they also posture themselves this way, that way. The big dog, woof woof, shows his teeth. Brrr. The pecking order amongst dogs. And in human society, it's there also. But one who is surrendered doesn't need to consider those things. Or doesn't consider those things in the perfected stage, because that protection and maintenance, both of these terms are there, but the Lord is one's protector, the Lord is one's maintainer. Thinking about this specifically in terms of the social structure of our ashram, it's Prabhupada's statement. I discussed this, I forget when, Friday evening maybe, one evening, when Prabhupada said that he wanted to go to Gita Nagari to... Did I discuss that here? Without Detroit? Not here. Okay. Prabhupada's in Vrindavan in the final stages of his life. And many things were going on. He invited all the GVCs and then all the... He was getting ready to depart. He wanted to make the plan of how the movement would go on. And at some point, very expert Tamal Krishnar said, Prabhupada, you're Krishna's soldier. You should, if you're going to leave, you should die on the battlefield. I think you should go to the West and continue to spread Krishna consciousness or something to that effect. Prabhupada said, yes, I will go. And then there were three purposes he wanted to fulfill. I can't remember the third, but give association to my devotees once again and go to Gita Nagari, as he named the place Gita Nagari, and show how to establish Varnashram. He didn't choose New Vrindavan or any of the other projects. It was, for some reason, specifically Gita Nagari. Does anybody remember from Lilamrita the third purpose he wanted to fulfill? I'll look it up later. So one of the persons that was with him, Abhiram Prabhu, was taking care of Prabhupada's medicines. For some reason he was given that service. And when with Prabhupada, he's shared this, he asked Prabhupada, you want to go to Gita Nagari or to the West and show how to establish Varnashram. What would you do? Nice question. Some pause, and then Prabhupada said, sit down and show how to live off the land. Now that could be interpreted as Varnashram means have farms. But we have farms. And not having the consciousness or the inclination to live off the land, now it's becoming a trend outside of ISKCON, by the way, that not just young idealistic people, but it's without all the anecdotal support information, there's a kind of a movement, a silent or quiet movement of people of means giving up their big places and buying a small farm and just doing that because they've done all these crazy things to get all their wealth and didn't bring happiness. It brought wealth, but wealth doesn't buy happiness. Anyway, it's happening. There's sparing all that. There's supportive information to say it's becoming a trend. And urban populations, trend-wise, are concerned that the supply of food comes from farms, and big, sprawling farms that produce cash crops, corn and soybeans for the cattle, that doesn't take care of the needs of their city population. Or, you know, Whole Foods and wherever else you get produce. So they promote farmers markets and they substantial sums of budget from cities go to what's called some term locking it in so that they'll give money if you as the private buyer buy a farm and commit that it will never ever ever be used for anything other than agriculture. Because the cities are giving money for that because they want to make sure they have a food supply for the people that are in the city. Anyway, having a farm doesn't mean you're going to have Varnashram. But living off the land does. Because what it does is, that's the economy. That's your maintenance. You know, Vaisha, Krishiko Rakya Vanijam, Vaisha Karma Svabhavacham. So, Krishi Gorakya Vanijam, so producing of grains, protection of cows, and Vanik, being engaged in commerce related to produce from the land and cows. Protecting cows. Then you have economy. Not exploiting cows, protecting cows. That's when you have economy, then you can have communities. When you have communities, then you need some administration of those communities. If you have a spiritually oriented community, then you need brahmanas for various services. So there goes brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, and then those that can simply assist with the agriculture work, whatever that may be, clearing the land, tilling the land, building things, maintaining things, repairing things, based upon economy. This is my personal understanding of what's behind the idea of Prabhupada's statement, sit down, because he's a brahmana. You're not going to do all the work. But show, mainly through his words, how to live off the land. So, maintenance is essential for the varnashram system. Maintenance is necessary as long as you have a body. And if you don't have an agrarian-based economy, you go into this other space it's fearful. You have a job and you don't know if tomorrow you're going to have a job. Etc., etc. And there's so many compromises. But, you know, who's willing to live off the land? Well, idealistic people may have that intention. And those that are followers of... Anyway, here's Devahuti. She's the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. She doesn't need maintenance. She's the wife of Kardamuni. She's got this fantastic vimana, palatial, opulent beyond heaven. Really, really amazing. What does she care about maintenance? But that's not where her comfort is, in that she's maintained. Her comfort is in this surrender to the personality of Godhead. She doesn't even have to think about it. I mean, she doesn't have to think about it on the material platform. There they are, these mentioned. These opulently decorated assistant ladies taking care of her every need. He's not thinking, this is the life. I made it. I'm at the top of the hill. She's accepting, but her heart is not into feeling pampered or, now this is very nice, I have people that are serving me, mentality. Her consciousness is different. Her consciousness is fully absorbed in the language here. It's a short purport, but she's taken shelter. A fully surrendered soul has no anxiety about the maintenance of his body. And again, one who surrenders unto the service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord takes charge of the maintenance of the devotee's body. Now that's the gross body, and then there's also the subtle body. You know, the physical well-being or material well-being follows spiritual well-being, like the shadow follows the object that casts the shadow. Maintenance of the body and protection of the body, because that's really strong. It's of the animal propensities, defending is the strongest. You can be doing any one of the other three, and if danger comes, you stop doing those other three, and this one takes prominence. Defending, protecting. And for the surrendered devotee, they're protected. Doesn't mean they do nothing, but they're not in anxiety about it. Vayam dutiyam avinivesha taksyat. This nice verse from 11th canto. Bhayam means fear. And fear arises when one has abhinivesh, or absorption in things other than Krishna. Dutiyam. Bhayam dutiyam abhinivesh taksyat. Arpashat means arises. Fear arises. But for one who has abhinivesh in Krishna only, his only affinity is, that's her. There's no bhayam. There's no need to protect. There's no need to maintain. I mean, there's activities of protection. There's activities of maintenance. But it's exclusively in service to the personality of Godhead. When Prabhupada stopped eating, it was clear that the devotees were saying, you won't be able to maintain your body if you don't eat. Please eat. He stopped eating. Literally. Now, what was going on with the pain of his body or any other thing on the physical plane, we don't know. But his consciousness was absorbed in Krishna, going to Krishna, and for whatever his purposes, demonstrating how to, with detachment, leave this world and go to Krishna. But for the needs of maintenance and the needs of protection, we're hearing from Devahuti's example, no need. Daivaguptam. Guptam. Gupta means hidden. But here the translation is protected. Devaguptam. Protected, in this case, not by the demigods, but by the personality, like Devi Hishaguna Mayimama Maya. So this is, the Lord gives his protection to one who surrendered to him. And we know that from spiritual teaching, and then to go more deeply and more deeply and more deeply, how do we do that? Well, it's both letting go of the temporary and taking shelter of the eternal. And letting go of the temporary doesn't mean neglect. It means the affinity for finding happiness there is gone, and one does perfunctory, or, you know, in a dutiful manner. Dutiful towards the service of the Supreme Lord. And he's very exalted, very instructive. Specifically, mentioned was she didn't become thin, and she was not aware that her hair was sometimes loosened or her garments were disarrayed. That doesn't mean, you know, we're advanced if we don't, we're unaware of our physical appearance. You know, we look really disheveled. That's not a sign of an advanced soul. If someone can imitate it, that behavior doesn't mean they're advanced. We, as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our founder Acharya, we don't do that. We follow our founder Acharya. And our founder Acharya was very meticulous about his appearance. He shaved. He told us we should. He showed by example. He was clear about not keeping hair. Every fortnight was his, you know, minimum shave for men. And why? Because there's vanity in hair, and then it becomes fashion and so forth. Now, when we speak in the public, however we may dress in the home, our private life isn't separate from our public life. We don't carry on in a disheveled manner. I don't want to get too lost here with these kinds of instructions, but our founder Acharya displayed impeccable everything, including physical presence, but not for the purpose of attracting others, but representing Krishna properly. Now certainly there are stages of life or persons whose nature is detached from the world to such an extreme, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, that he would sometimes not appear properly. And sometimes he would go the opposite extreme in order to have people leave him alone. But for the purposes of preaching, and that's what we are, we're part of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and so the appearance is important for the purpose of mission. And so many other things. Prabhupada did not emphasize learning Sanskrit. I was asked twice already during this visit, have you studied Sanskrit? And I said, no. There was surprise, really. Because if you're going to be, learned in the Vedas, you've got to study Sanskrit, right? And no. Well, how do you get learned in the Vedas? Well, just by hearing. Then, pronunciation. There was a little booklet that Lokanath Maharaj drafted and then circulated. And that booklet speaks about the importance of Sanskrit pronunciation, because as preachers, the public, when they hear devotees that don't know how to pronounce the Sanskrit properly, they find it strange. It diminishes their respect for the speaker if they don't pronounce the Sanskrit properly. It's interesting. The preface was kind of a balance. It's not important, but it's important. Kind of a message. And especially at leaders that are in the public view, just like dressing properly and tilak properly and not exhibiting vanity in various ways, speaking Sanskrit properly. Why? Because it's for service. So we do those things that are in the material field with care and attention, because it's for service. But Devahuti is not in that position. She's however old, and in her final stages of life. We're going to hear about that in a moment. And so there's no need for that external, like her hair specifically mentioned, or her clothing specifically mentioned. She was sometimes unaware. As the previous verse was giving the expression, forgetful. Like you forget about the dream that you had last night or sometime in the past, because it was just a dream. There may be some lingering memory. There may be some lingering feeling of whatever the feelings were within that dream. But it fades, because it's like a cloud in the sky. It's insubstantial. And time changes the clouds in the sky. And time changes the thoughts in the mind. There may be some impression, but it just fades. And when full surrender comes, it's dissipated, not just fades. So this is a very advanced stage. It's like it's non-existent, because of the intensity of absorption in the personality of Godhead. And now, so Daiva Guptam, being protected by the Supreme Lord. So she was not unprotected. That was something discussed earlier also. Karamuli left. Kapiladev left. So she's unprotected in one sense, but she's protected because of the instructions and her adherence to the instructions. So she was protected in all respects. Her maintenance needs, her protection needs, and all of her needs. now text 30. This text 30 is part of a series. 30, 31, 32, 32, and 31 don't have purports. I'm going to read them together. Text 30. My dear Vidura, by following the principles instructed by Kapila, Devahuti soon became liberated from material bondage and she achieved the Supreme Personality Godhead as Supersoul without difficulty. Three words have been used in this connection to purport to describe the achievement of Devahuti: Atmanam, Brahma Nirvanam, and Bhagavantam. These refer to the gradual process of discovery of the Absolute Truth mentioned herein as Bhagavantam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead resides in various Vaikuntha planets. Nirvana means to extinguish the pangs of material existence. When one is able to enter into the spiritual kingdom or into a spiritual realization, one is automatically freed from all material pangs, This is called Brahma, Nirvana. According to Vedic scripture, Nirvana means cessation of the materialistic way of life. Atmanam means realization of the Supersoul within the heart. Ultimately, the highest perfection is realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is to be understood that Devahuti entered the planet which is called Kapila Vaikuntha. There are innumerable Vaikuntha planets predominated by the expansions of Vishnu. All the Vaikuntha planets are known by a particular name of Vishnu. As we understand from Brahma Samhita, Advaitam Achutam Anadim Ananta Rupam, Ananta means, quote, innumerable. The Lord has innumerable expansions of His transcendental form, and according to the different positions of the symbolic representation in His four hands, He is known as Narayana Pradyumna Aniruddha Vasudeva, etc. There is also a Vaikuntha planet known as Kapila Vaikuntha, to which Devahuti was promoted to meet Kapila and reside there eternally, enjoying the company of her transcendental son. So now also 31 and 32, they go together. The palace where Devahuti achieved her perfection should be placed. The place where Devahuti achieved her perfection, my dear Vidura, is understood to be a most sacred spot. It is known all over the three worlds as Siddha Pada. Siddha Pada. My dear Vidura, the material elements of her body have melted into water and are now a flowing river, which is the most sacred of all rivers. Anyone who bathes in that river also attains perfection, and therefore all persons who desire perfection go bathing there. Where's that place? In Ishapanishad, we hear something that makes complete practical sense. When the soul achieves perfection, or even when the soul moves on to another body, perfection or not, the elements of the body go back to the reservoir of elements. The air merges with the totality of air, the water goes with the water, and the earth goes with the earth, and the elements go back to their elemental state, the elements that comprise the body, so that next time around when there's another body to be developed, there's a big warehouse, a storeroom of elements to make the next bodies. That's standard. And in this case, because Devahuti was Devahuti, and some special arrangement was made for her not, in many ways, one of them, special arrangement, was as described here, kind of mystical, her body melted into a river, and it's a sacred river, and bathing there, you go back to Godhead too. Anyone who bathes in that river also attains perfection. Now, it's not, obviously, it's not a, like a magic wand. You touch the magic wand to your head and, you know, you get a spiritual body. You go back to Godhead. It's not a magical thing like that, but rather there's a process, and the process permits one who's progressive to achieve perfection. Like I was mentioning yesterday, what we're hearing with Devahuti is, I was using the term slow motion, like step by step. Here it just says attain perfection. There's lots of steps. But you know, the potency, the message is, the potency is there for that to happen. And then there's volition. And with volition there's conduct. Like, you know, the discussion yesterday afternoon, in the midday program, where our host was asking, isn't it just like numerically a certain thing that after a certain number of possibilities of lives, you're going to go back to Godhead because just by laws of chance? Interesting. You know, use that logic and say just by laws of chance that universes come into being. How did the universe come to be? Just chance. Really. And you go back to Godhead by chance. Just, you know, a number of possibilities, and eventually when you hit the bingo, hit the lottery, you can go back to Godhead. Just keep buying tickets. Eventually you're going to win. Anyway, but it's definitely not like that, because even if numerically there's you can win the lottery. Just play enough time, but buy enough tickets and you're going to win. It's not a certainty, but, you know, numerically, there's laws of probability say, but this option of going back to Godhead requires free will. So attained perfection is not minus or in the absence of some free will, but there's the potential is there, the potency is there within this sacred river. And another small point, but just before coming here to Chicago or Naperville, I was in Detroit and we were covering the prior verses, and one of the persons was asking, is Kapila a Shaktivesh avatar? Shaktivesh, I assume you know, but Shaktivesh means a jiva commonly. It can also be Vishnu Tattva, but a jiva that's empowered with the potency of God, and then therefore they act like God because they're empowered with the fullness of the potencies of God in a certain feature. So this devotee wanted to know, is Kapila a Shaktivesh avatar? They heard something somewhere that said that in the class. So, no. According to Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami, and we're followers of Rupa Goswami, he indicates he's Angsa avatar. Angsa means Vishnu Tattva. And he has a particular category of Vishnu Tattva without all that detail. But here it's confirmed in a different way. There's this Vaikuntha planet called Kapila Vaikuntha. So he's there. It's not as jiva that's empowered, he's there as Vishnu. And the same Vishnu appeared before Kardama and said, I'll become your son, and he became his son. Now, it's certainly possible. There's lots of things that are possible. It's certainly possible the Supreme Lord empowered Jiva to become his empowered expansion. And it's certainly possible that for the most part of all the different yuga cycles, they're Vishnu Tattva, and there may be this exception that one may not be Vishnu Tattva, may be an empowered incarnation. That's a possibility. No indication that that's the case, but certainly it's a possibility. I did find one reference, just sharing as a detail, that in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 7, in mentioning Shaktivesh avatars, Kapila is right at the front of the list. But Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, I think it's a editing error or some type of error, because Teachings of Lord Chaitanya is a summary of the Shiksha sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's just simply extracting from Chaitanya Charitamrita the five sections where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatan Rupa Goswami, Prakashananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and then finally his talks with Ramananda Roy. That's teaching the Lord Chaitanya. So it's just taken from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's not there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just doing some little research and sharing. He's an Angsa avatar. He's a Vishnu Tattva form. And there's this, like, Kapila Vaikuntha. Just like when Lord Ramachandra appeared and returned. He was a form of Vishnu and returned to Vaikuntha as the presiding personality of Ayodhya in the spiritual sky. Kapila in the same position. And so because this section is Devahuti goes back to Godhead, Yam Yam Bhapi Smaran Bhavam. Smaran is Smarana. Just like we were discussing from text 26, this Vishnu Smarana, this is Dhyana, it's the mind fixed. Samadhi is trance. Dharana is the mind fixed. And where the mind is fixed on, Smarana, that's where you go. So what your mind is fixed on today is going to determine the trajectory of your life in the next hour and the next day and then the rest of your life. So where the mind goes is critical. Therefore, in the yoga practice or in bhakti yoga practice, not only what you do but what your mind does is critical. And there are ways to help fix the mind, starting with proper hearing. Start with proper hearing. Shravanam. We were discussing this yesterday. How do you get that proper hearing? There's nice instructions about it. But it's the what to do becomes easier when you have a clear sense of why. Not just a liberationist idea or salvationist idea or I'm suffering, I don't like to suffer idea, I want to be happy. Because when the suffering, the supposing, suffering becomes reduced, then you relax. You become complacent. So that's not Devahuti. Or it's not the person who is progressive in Krishna consciousness. The hearing is to energize the spirit of service, of taking shelter in the mood of service, not the shelter in the mood of I want my miseries taken away or I want my economic problems taken away or I want my curiosity addressed or I want knowledge or I want liberation. I want to be clear what we want. And in the beginning, that it's mixed. So it's less clear. And so our progress is not so rapid. It's just progress just by contact with the hearing process. The progress is slow. depending upon the temporary, the features of temporariness that we're attached to. And it's easy. Like falling off a log, as they say, to become attached to the temporary. When you don't have, you want, and when you have, you're attached and don't want to lose it. And the mood of service is the cure. The mood of service is the root of detachment. It's the proper kind of shelter, the mood of humble service. So she's doing this not just because I want out of here, she's doing this because of her extremely developed mood of service, shelter taking in the mood of service. So that's where she goes. She goes to Kapila Vaikuntha and leaves behind her the means for others to go to Kapila Vaikuntha. In a very interesting manner, her body melts into a river. I don't know if anybody else can do that. In other words, it's by the will of the Supreme Lord to make that possible. Okay, so any discussion? Yeah.
Question about describing mode of service. The question about how to overcome feelings of exploited. Because initially we're talking about animal tendencies, defensiveness is more prominent. Mm. That is more like I.
Volume up because this blower.
Yeah. There is always a constant anxiousness of getting exploited or other people take advantage of me, that kind of thing, Guru Maharaj.
Supposing they do exploit or take advantage. Or try to. Krishna is your protector. I'm thinking of a little Prabhupada story. Prabhupada was visiting a friend during his grihastha days that was a very successful businessman. And the man kept saying over and over how he... Maybe a story that Prabhupada told about someone. In any case, the man is giving a tour of his business, saying how much he trusts everybody. And then the observer noticed there's locks on everything. And at the end, you know, I thought you said you trust everybody. He said, yes, I trust them. But I don't want to give them temptation, so I'm locking everything. And Prabhupada was very keen on putting locks on things. And in part, that's what you have to do when you live in India, because there's abundant thieves. In Punyabhumi, there's abundant thieves. And if you don't know, you'll find out the hard way. People may try to exploit you. So what do? We take, you know, sensible precaution. You put a lock on your door. You put a lock on your car door. You may get a car alarm. But if you live in fear that somebody may exploit my house or my car or my possessions or me or something, you take necessary precaution and you trust in Krishna. And if that happens, you may ante up the precaution, but you know, you move on. You don't make Krishna your servant to be your protector. In that sense, you take sensible precaution. In higher stages, there's compassion for such people. Thinking now of this example of Jayadev, the author of Gita Govinda and our Nrisimha prayers, which is part of Gita Govinda, and you know Dasavatar Stotra, and so many other. Short, it's a beautiful long story, but the short story is he, in order to have a festival for his deity, Radha Madhava, he's a Brahmin that doesn't have means, so he went on a tour singing and speaking Gita Govinda, knowing that by so doing people would give some donation, and then the donation was for the festival for his deity, not for anything else. And on his way back to his home, some dacoits exploited him. They not only robbed him, but they threw him in the bottom of a well. You know, murder. Robbery and murder. And the protection part of Krishna was there, that a king was passing by, saw the well, wanted to get some water from the well, and looked down the well, and there's a person at the bottom of the well. So he got the person out of the bottom of the well, as well as some water, and took that person back to his kingdom. And he heard Jayadev speaking Gita Govinda. And he was, wow, you're not an ordinary person. And he arranged for his wife to come, and he honored Jayadev and wanted to have a big festival so all the people in his kingdom could experience this wonderful personality, Jayadev. So the brahmanas were particularly invited, and the dacoits showed up at the dressed as brahmanas to receive something from the dakshina that would be given to the brahmanas. Jayadev saw that he recognized the dacoits in the audience. So he turned to one of the king's assistants and, you know, indicated by gesture. So the dacoits thought, uh-oh, they're going to come get us. He's told them that, you know, he's the one that tried to kill me. And so the dacoits ran. And the assistants of the king went chasing after them. And when chasing after them, they finally caught them. Now, this detail I can't remember quite so well, but when they caught them, the dacoits said, this person is a bad person. He did something, 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 and we ran because he's a bad person. You shouldn't have anything to do with he's a bad person. And as they were speaking offensively against Jayadev, the narration goes, the earth opened up and they were swallowed in a sinkhole and they were gone. And the attendants of the king were quite surprised. So the attendants of the king went back and told the king. And so the king went to Jayadev and said, you had asked the constables to give special remuneration to those men. Why did you do that? Because so the constables were going not to apprehend them, but to give them the pretend brahmanas some special gift. And Jayadev said, well, I could understand that the reason that they did their robbery and attempted murder is because they're financially distressed. So give them some special finance so that you don't have to be in such anxiety. You know, those that are exploiting. Now that's pretty high. But that's the position of those that are spiritually elevated. And aside from the such a nice Vaishnava narrative, there's two somethings that came to my attention recently. One was in the Amish community in Pennsylvania, a child was murdered by some people that don't like Amish people. It said, hit the media that the first thing they did is they got together in their assembly house and prayed for the person who was the abuser. And then when asked, you know, what's going on? You know, like, that was their first response. It wasn't like, you know, a public relations response. It was their response. That this, you know, not let this man get what he deserves, but compassion for the person that was so disturbed that he did this thing. Interesting. Interesting. Then, similar, this long story, it's just this example of the same thing. Persons that are exploiting in, you know, heinous ways, how to respond to that. There was this South African, what's it called, to reconciliation, truth and reconciliation in South Africa, where people, the black people, were given the opportunity to address the persons who abused them and exploited them. I forget, there's some language. So there was a court proceeding where a woman was face to face with her accuser, with the accused man who killed her husband. You know the story? Yes? So I may get the story wrong, but it goes something like this. It was recognized that the murderer murdered her husband. It's a really ugly story of how it happened. Husband and son or something like that? Husband and son. And so the black lady was given, you know, what should be his sentence? What should be the punishment? And so this, you know, someone was taking advantage of you, or one was, take me to the place where the body of my husband was buried so I can pay my respects, because she didn't even know. Then another was something like, come to my home on a periodic basis or something. Huh? And so the man broke down. You know, a bad person, his heart was shattered and broken. That's a very elevated response to one who is taking advantage or exploiting or an aggressor. But the principle is the principle of forgiveness and compassion. Because there's something on the other side that's very dark. Why, that's where the aggression exploitation thing comes from. You know, the forgetfulness of Krishna. So how to melt the heart or change the heart or transform the heart of someone who has that problem. That can be where your thought goes. And you may not know what to do, but that can be where your thought goes. And Krishna is my protector. And then you take precaution. You know, identity theft and all kinds of things that go on in the world today. You take precaution. Something? Anything? Yes. Microphone?
Krishna, good Maharaj. When we hear these passions, especially as we are hearing about Devahuti, how she has achieved perfection, and we have so many other pastimes that we hear. There is certain element of faith when I'm hearing, but as I'm contemplating later, the mind tells, are you really sure it's going to happen? So certain kind of doubt or not having complete faith, and at times those feelings are like so strong that it even comes to the chanting and it kind of disturbs. Is it really necessary for me to chant? Are those feelings what to do at those times?
Step at a time. Like this Gitanagari retreat, recognition and progress. What the part that's now is recognition. That tendency for doubt is there. Tendency to hesitate. And it's, you know, it's part of our conditioning. We don't have full shelter of Krishna because we have shelter, we have another foot in another boat. So that's the recognition part. And then what to do is, what's the next step? So let me continue with the process of hearing and chanting and cultivation of shelter of Krishna. And then by internal reflection or guidance or combination, you consider what's a step in the direction that I want to go. But minimally, you know, the qualitative improvement in our hearing, that is to say, what's going to cleanse the heart of misgivings. Misgivings include doubts, or the essence of that is affinity for matter. And the cure for affinity for matter, there's going to be happiness and safety and protection in fallible soldiers, my own arrangements, my own strength, etc. And move that direction, in direction of the position of shelter. Just continue. Be clear what the goal is and keep moving towards the goal, whatever the distance is between you and the goal. In a qualitative way, primarily, improve the practice, focusing on the goal. And you maybe have some intermediate goals or even some short-term goals. Something where you have some doubt about, I don't know, something. In a far more minimal fashion. I don't know. That I can get up when at the right time. I have doubt. So then you marshal resources to make sure you can do that. You know, and Krishna will help you. And Krishna's not going to see that effort go unnoticed, and so on. Anything else? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.